With the state of today's economy, it is more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made of the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back into your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Welcome to another episode of The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes, the storytelling show that features The Clearing, where all good questions come to get asked and all good stories come to be told, and where all my guests have two things in common. They're all creative individuals and all with an interesting story to tell. There are some lovely storytelling metaphors. A clearing, a tree, a juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1, some alchemy, some gold, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, and a cake. So it's all to play for. So yes, welcome to the Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes. Are you sitting comfortably? Then we shall begin. Hurrah! Welcome! Thank you so much. That's not the end of the show. There is time for more. Welcome to those watching on YouTube and Facebook. It's billions of people. In truth, it's probably just a troll who's all set to set the world to rights in his pants in a few hours' time, and a random sheep, a couple of squirrels, and a stoat. But here we are, live in the room at the Slapstick Festival. This is the 19th Slapstick Festival. Good evening, latecomers. Please don't be at all embarrassed. Welcome and sit down. So let's get on the open road. I do promise we're going to get you out of here. Now, there's a lovely bit of comedy slapstick in any case, because Michael Palin starts bang on 8:30. And Robin Ince is about to come on. I will give him a proper introduction shortly. And it's going to go one of two ways. Robin Ince and I would prefer to be carried out in triumph as we do a bit of crowd surfing as we go towards the other venue. Or we're going to get killed in, we're going to get stampeded to death. So it's going to go one of two ways, but I will get you out of here on time. So thank you so much for being here for History in the Making. And again, sit back, relax, and enjoy 45 minutes of storytelling with, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Robin Ince, writer, comedian, podcaster, superbrain, slapstick constant, the MC of choice. Here he is, Robin Ince.
Hello. Thanks, Chris. Thank you very much. Thank you.
I've written a new joke especially for you. Give Robin an ince and he'll speak for an hour. Off you go. I knew you'd know exactly what to do. So we're going to get you on the open road. Thank you for being here as I drop my hooter. And if we go down any rabbit holes, this is a bell where I'll be going... Rabbit hole number, probably 478, please.
Okay.
In your case.
Brilliant.
And it's a real pleasure. This is quite a... Obviously, you are the infinite monkey cage whisperer, obviously, of Brian Cox as well. And I've always really enjoyed it when he says you missed the point again on a subatomic level.
Yep. No, yes. He is. Yeah, it's one of those interesting... Because he's a very... he's only got two talents, which is understanding the universe and playing the piano. And so I have to then cover everything else, you know, which is a lot of... in fact, there's an episode coming out very soon, which is my favourite, because I always like it when you suddenly see moments of weakness with him. And he's terrified of spiders. And we did one with three live spiders, an orb-weaving spider, a huntsman spider, and a St Andrew's Cross spider. And he genuinely was really, really nervous.
And was that the Australian episode?
This is the Australian... Australia and Sydney, and we had this incredible time where when the St Andrew's Cross spider came out, which was a really exciting spider. So the female was right in the middle of the web, and then the woman in charge, who's a brilliant spider expert, she said, "I'm now going to introduce the male." And then a whole audience of 500 people were suddenly, we've never had this on Monkcage before, tremendously excited by the fact that they may well just about to see sex followed by extreme arachnid cannibalism.
Wow.
And everyone was, oh my God. And then it turned out she wasn't interested, so nothing really happened. But it, when it came out on the frame, Brian just kind of went, I thought they were all going to be in a box. And I said, they are. It's just we didn't say whether it would be open or closed. This one's open. And yeah, it was. And it also, we had... One of the things about scientists is sometimes they take everything very, very literally and very, you know, on a kind of equation-based level. And so I knew that our spider expert would be fantastic because Brian in the sound check went, oh, can I just check? So you're not actually originally from Australia, are you? She went, no, I'm from Austria, but we had to leave because of the chocolate famine. And Brian went, oh, I didn't know about the chocolate famine. So I thought, yeah, this is going to be fun.
And next time, just get a praying mantis because that will give you the sort of action of sort of sex followed by decapitation we also enjoy.
Yeah, it is. It turns out a spectator sports go. It's mine of choice.
Thank you. So it's my absolute joy and pleasure. If I ever go like this, it's not because I'm trying to say cashier number 3 or rabbit hole number 400. It's just to move it along because
sure.
You've got 45 minutes. And it's my great pleasure. And by the way, I'm quite proud of that simian-like photograph as well as the, you know, infinite monkey is out of his cage. And I also came to see you talk about your brilliant book, Bibliomaniac. And what was astonishing was you didn't talk about it at all. And this is at Bookhouse. And you did the most generous thing where, as your brain operates in this way, you were throwing out the most generous frisbees of other people's books.
Well, that's what
I
love doing.
You barely got onto your own.
It's what almost all of my work is, I think, now, is I'm constantly making kind of... for those of you who are old enough, you remember when you used to make compilation tapes for someone on a date, and you're like... And that's what I like. Basically, what I'm doing, which is... There are so, like, I had a lovely moment just earlier where I don't know if you've seen here, there's a kind of shelf of library books you can take out. And there was a woman just looking at them, and I suddenly noticed this magnificent novel called Stay With Me by Eyabami Adebayo, which is one of my favourite novels of the last 10 years. And I thought, I don't know this person, but I'm just going to go up there and go, hello, I've just seen you looking at the books. This one's absolutely fantastic. And then she turned and thought, she went, I was hoping you'd come over. I'm totally lost. I've seen you before. Lead me through the books. And I love, you know, that bit of sharing. I think there is so much negativity in the world. I think there are so many people who are paid a large amount of money to sell spite and derision. And we've, you know, we see that every single week. So what those of us who can have to do is go, here is the love and here is the joy and here is the laughter and here are some... Like, there's a movie called The Quiet Girl. Has anyone seen The Quiet Girl yet? Oh, what did you think? Oh, thank heavens. I was getting worried because there was a possibility that you'd go, no, it was awful. It was, for me, one of the most magnificent films that I've seen in the last 10 years. And just full of love, isn't it, as well? Full of this. And so the moment I see something like that, I want to just tell everyone, you've got to see this. Before you go and see the next Marvel movie, go and see a quiet but beautiful film. And then another book that I bought the other day, I was at Warwick Bookshop, and Mog and Pauline, who run it, they said, you must read this. It's called A Short History of Queer Women. And it's basically just about, sometimes it's been written out of history, women who've achieved remarkable things, who were lesbians, and it starts off with Sappho. And I just picked it up, and I started reading it. And you know when a book's got so much momentum, you think you'll crash if you close it, because it's just dragging you through at such speed, and it's witty, and it's smart, and it's just got so... And so the moment I read something like that, everyone must read this as well. You know, when you sometimes sit on a train and you look at what people are reading, and or movies, a lot of the time, you go, oh man, there's all these big budget movies that have gone through so many different... And then there's these little small films, which, as you watch them, you can feel that tangible love. You can feel the pain that went into going, you know, making it. And so that's what I feel that very strongly. More, I think the older I get, the more that I feel that's what I need to do. Because also, I think anyone here who is also someone who might sometimes struggle with, you know, mental health issues and stuff like that, when you know what it's like to sometimes feel down and lost and all those, you are desperate to make sure that no one else feels like that as well. I know it's something, you know, Robin Williams, there's so many beautiful stories. When he died, the number of people who said, oh, I've never told you this story, but... And there's a lovely story of him. He went into a donut shop and he sees this family and they're all sat there and they all just look a bit sad. And he buys his donuts and then he just goes over and he just says, oh, hi, you know. And it turns out it's their grandmother has died. And then he just keeps talking. And then slowly he goes into Robin Williams mode. And then by the end of it, the whole family are laughing. And, you know, the guy who said the story said that was the first time I saw my dad laugh since his mother had died. And it was like, he didn't want to leave that table seeing that sadness. Thought, maybe I can turn something on here. Maybe I can do something.
UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
So what's really clear then is you're like a super connector. The book that goes just subterranean and is all the fungi that are connecting across the planet. When I experienced you doing your thing, frisbees of, you know, like fireflies of emotional intelligence, just bunging stuff out, it's incredibly generous and it just keeps on giving. And I was really struck with the fact that everybody watching it is going to remember something subtly different that resonates for them. But it's just this big...
Oh, it's very nice you to say, because I'd love doing it. It's like when I did... between tours with Brian Cox, we came back from Australia. We had just under 3 weeks where we weren't on tour, and then I went back to New Zealand. And I managed to fit in about 25 bookshops around the UK to just go and do talks and a couple of libraries and stuff. And someone said to me, God, don't you just want to sit down? And I was like, no! This is the energising thing of being in a room with people who love ideas. And the ages are always so variable. You know, there'll be a 9-year-old in the audience, and there may well be, as there was the other night, there was someone who was 93. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you look out and you're uncertain because we make rapid judgments on people, don't we? And then you go, actually, do you know what? They're all in a bookshop or they're all in a library. I can really throw some of those judgments away. And there was, like, I had this one talk where there was a 93-year-old in the front row and she had wonderful eyebrows, the most wonderful expressive eyebrows, and she started to basically conduct my talk because every time that I looked, whether she was quizzical or filled with joy or whatever it was, I would think, oh, I'm going to go down that route. She seems very, very interested in how Helen Sharman went into space. And I go, oh no, I think now quantum superposition, she's not interested in that at all, so I'm going to go off in another route. And then afterwards she came up to me and it was such a, she went, I'm 93 years old and I just had to tell you that when I was younger they made me study languages, two of them dead, and then I was made to go and join the diplomatic corps, which I didn't really want to do, but now I'm 93 and I've always loved science and I can do anything I want, so thank you. And I just, you know, I love this, that passion that had just not left her at all.
So let me get you on the open road then. We're going to get the story behind the story.
Okay.
You're on the open road anyway, and that's the wonderful thing. So I stand by my joke about I ask you one question and you'll keep talking, which is brilliant. Thank you so much. So the first construct is a clearing. So what is a serious happy place for you, Robin? Where do you go to get clutter-free, inspirational, and able to think?
Well, I don't really have a place where I'm able to think because it just goes on the whole time. It's very noisy in there. And it's always been a fascinating thing to me where once you start being able to be open about how your mind is what's going on with your mind, you start to find other people. Like, one of my favourite things was I've done a festivals and sometimes a parent will come up to me and say, my 12-year-old daughter just turned to me and said, that's what my head sounds like. And I think, oh, good. You know, I'm glad that they're seeing that they're not alone. I would say the place... It's like I did a show with my friend Carl, and this will link to the answer, right? Possibly. Find out in a minute.
I may be gay.
Carl is... Carl, we did a show called Reality Tunnel, two-part of a Radio 4, where I talked about the way that our minds work internally and then one about the way our minds kind of deal with the external situation. And I talked so fast in that Carl actually said, oh, my God, I'm trying to cut this down as much as possible to fit 28 minutes, but I can't lose 48 seconds. He said, there's 48 seconds. I just can't find what it's going to be. And he said, normally what I do is I just slightly speed it up and no one notices. He said, but I tried it with you.
He tried
and
that,
you're already
yes.
talking at maximum speed for comprehension, right? So, but Carl is one of the few people that I feel entirely comfortable with. He used to be an ice cream salesman in Blackburn Market. In fact, the BBC had to really beg him to, because he wrote some shows with Chris Addison that won awards. And they went, oh, please come and work for us as a producer. And he went, no, I do ice creams on Wednesday and Saturday. And that, to me, is someone you can trust. Someone who doesn't want, you know...
His boundary is
yeah,
clear.
They don't want showbiz to get in the way of their Wednesday and Saturday ice cream selling in Blackburn Market. And I just find with him, in a house in Levenshulme that he lives, we create a lot and I feel so comfortable. Like, this gives you a good example. When There was one night where Brian was at the Albert Hall doing a special show celebrating 150 years of the Albert Hall with lords and ladies and celebrities. And then some other people I knew at the South Bank Show Awards. And I was with Carl in the Aldi in Burnage trying to work out which bottle of rosé would go best with the film we might watch at one in the morning, right? And at no point did I think, I can't believe it. Me, 53 years old in show business, all the awards, and I'm stuck here in an Aldi in Burnage. I really was going, this is where I'm meant to be. I'm meant to be with Carl, and we're there having this debate going, do we buy the bottle that's overly decorative, or is that disguising something? Is the overly decorative nature of the bottle to say that the rosé will be very poor? And we took the risk, and actually it was both overly decorative and delicious as well. And then we watched the first 5 minutes of 40... Shut up! 40 minutes... I returned to you. We watched the first 40 minutes of the first 5 minutes of about 40 different Netflix specials and went, nope, and then we found one that was filled with love and joy.
Anyway, shut your face.
Next
now,
one, let's go.
We can take as a clearing then, outside the ice cream van, that would work, all the Aldi car park, or do you want to be specific about where you're...
Do you know what? If it's okay, we're going to be in the little room in the house in Levenshulme where we sat, we've got a bottle of rosé there,
lovely.
And Carl is playing me some Mark Steele that he's
lovely.
Trying to work out how to edit with Mark Steele. Another thing there about Stratford-upon-Avon, bloody annoying, right?
Lovely.
The one-way system of the Stratford... Yeah, so that's what we're doing.
Wonderful. So now we're in that clearing, wonderful, with a bottle of rosé just to the part there. I'm now going to arrive a bit existentially with a tree in your clearing, and we're going to shake your tree a bit, waiting for Godot-esque, to get you to answer the construct 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Okay.
So you've had 5 minutes, or as long as you've needed, since you agreed to say yes, and thank you for doing that. So 4 things that have shaped you, 3 things that have inspired you, 2 things that never fail to grab your attention, and this is a question that could be even designed for you. It's what are your random squirrels? Well, squirrels that never fail to distract you, whatever else is going on in your life. And then finally, a quirky or unusual fact about you we couldn't possibly know until you tell us. So it's over to you to sort of shake the canopy of your tree. There's some alchemy, some gold, some Shakespeare, and a cake coming as well.
Right.
So we've got a lot to cram in before we get carried out triumphantly to do a bit of audience surfing as we go to the next show. So...
Shaped me. So is that the first one?
Four
things that have shaped me. One of the first would be Alexis Sale. I could have also said Rick Mayall possibly, but when I was 11 years old, seeing Alexis Sale on OTT, definitely suddenly just going, oh my God, this is a possibility. I would say that is an absolutely enormous moment. You know, wine bars, uncle, wine bars, because of all the people dining. Wine bars, uncle, wine bars, because of all the people whining. Ever had a multiple orgasm? Yes, it made me sick. I once loved a hamster bird, I killed it with a brick. Was a great song. And Rumpty Toodle, Pina Colada. A half a pound of muesli. What do you think of Shirley Williams? I want to go to the toilet. So that one, on a happy side, that was an enormous thing that shaped me. On a thing that is perhaps a slightly bleaker one, was that when... I'm allowed to do that as well, in terms
of
the shape things.
It's not. It's meant to be existentially profound, not just fluffy.
Well, when I was 3 years old, and I'm sorry if anyone's heard this story before, and I talked a bit about the book I wrote, I'm a Joke and So Are You. Just before I was 3, I was in a car accident. It was a very short journey we were having. There was myself, one of my sisters in the back, and my mum was driving the car, 2.5 mile journey. And on that journey, there was a car that was speeding and on the wrong side of the road, and it crashed into us. My sister got her head slightly cut open. I was fine, and my mum was severely injured. And she went into a coma. She only survived because my dad shouted at the ambulance people and said, you can't just take her to the local hospital. This is really catastrophic what she's faced. And then when she woke up from the coma, she didn't realise that any of us existed because she'd woken up as an 18-year-old.
Wow.
So there were, you know, a lot of things, and that led to a lot of battles that she had to have as well. She was a very good mother, by the way, make that clear, but she also had a lot of battles. And because I was just about to be 3 years old, because of that, I thought I'd caused the accident. Because when you're small, you look at the world, and when something terrible happens, sometimes you think, oh, I've done that. And certainly sometimes when you upset adults, and all, you know, I think it's a very important thing. There's my friend Philippa Perry, who people might know as a therapist and as an author. She told me this brilliant thing once. She said, if she sometimes sees an adult shouting at a child, you know, because sometimes we forget, because a child is human shaped, we think their brain is, you know, and of course so much is going on, it's so different. And so you shout at a 3-year-old as if they, you know, why did you put yogurt on the window? You know, as if they've had some. Of course, they haven't had the process that anyone else would have had, you know, if you're an adult. And she said, if I see that kind of thing, then what I do is I go over. She said, if it's on a train, and I just turn to the adult, I say, are you okay? You look like you're having a bad day. And she says, more often than not, the adult then starts shouting at me. But that means that the child sees that and says, oh, it's not just me. Mm-hmm. And it's a bit like, I think, did I mention Lem Cissé's book the other day when we at Bookhouse? I can't remember that.
I can't remember either.
There was sorry, I have no... One of my favourite things, where I was chatting about this with Griff Rhys-Jones, actually, earlier on, because that's the kind of thing you do at Slapstick. You just chat with Griff Rhys-Jones. And just been having a pie with Rob Brydon. Yeah, that's the life. And and if he plays his cards all right, I'll take him to the nearest Aldi as well. But it is... now I've distracted. Lem Cissé, he talks about the fact that when he was sent from his foster parents to a care home, he thought it must have been something he'd done. And as the social worker was driving him to this care home, so he's been sent out of the house, you know, this was suddenly total change, 12-year-old boy. And he must have just been sitting there going, oh, no, I must have done something wrong, and they don't want me in the house anymore. And his social worker pulled over the car and said, Lem, it's very important you know this. You haven't done anything wrong. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, those kind of stories, I think, are such important stories for people to, you know, for many of us, and I'm sure many people here, there are lots of things that have happened in our lives which sometimes we go, but that was years ago, whatever. And facing up and understanding why you've become who you've become. And I certainly think, I mean, I briefly tried therapy, but I wasn't very good. If you ever do want silence, therapy. It was no good at all. And I was lucky because she had really interesting wallpaper. And I'd lie on the couch and think, oh, no, I think I said that last week. Like it was a gig. Like, you know, I go, oh, no, I don't want to say that because it might make her feel unhappy about me. You know, so I had... The trouble is that I couldn't really talk about the things that I had because one of the things is being worried about upsetting people.
So your relationship to silence then, were you not... You just were not silent through all the therapy you were receiving?
I just kind of... About 20 minutes in, I'd come up with something. Yeah. But I was always worrying about her. Uh-huh. Like, her stomach would rumble, and I'd think, is she eating? Is she okay? You know, all of So I was terrible at therapy. But there was this one bit of therapy, which was... she was a very nice therapist, and she was smart. She could see through some of the games that I was playing. But I had this horrible realisation of when... You know, when that like, your backstory, and you go, oh, what a cliché! And it was the fact that when after the accident and when my mother finally came home, when she would... Because she suffered from depression and stuff, sometimes she would get very, very upset... And I, as the youngest, would go upstairs to her room and try and put on a show and make her feel happy. And it was like, and you just go, oh, God, that's my cliche. That's my, you know, that's my, you know, the thing is, and I think why I spent so much of my time being very worried about people being unhappy.
And a real intent to people please is the sort of genesis of that, always, even in riffing and making sure the 93-year-old in the bookshop is getting the story she needs. There's this intention to...
Well, I think now it's changed. I think now, because I have a greater understanding of... I was very, very lucky, you know, many comedians and many people here as well. You may well have had that experience. Lockdown, I think, confronted us with our minds because we lost a lot of the distractions. We lost a lot of the ways that... And, of course, a lot of people have been diagnosed with kind of ADHD and other things like that. And when an autistic stranger called Jamie got in contact with me and said, could I talk about the neurodivergent model with you? I said, yeah. And that is a huge change for me. And I know there's going to be a lot of people who will consider these things to be faddy and whatever it is, but I can honestly tell you that my life now is considerably better than it was 2 years ago. And even though I always worry about an audience, I'm worried that people are sat there now and some of you are thinking, this is not what I thought it was going to be, and some of you are thinking, oh Jesus, still another half an hour before we get to see Michael Palin, he'll cheer us up, you know, whatever it is. But I don't have that nearly as much. And I've also realised that, you know, Brian, when we talk, we'll often go, why'd you say that weird thing? That's really weird. That's weird. That's weird. And then I realised, well, that's actually been 50 years of my life, is people thinking I'm weird and me thinking I'm weird. And now I am weird, but it's okay, because that's what I am.
Embracing a superpower because you've had the label of ADHD, which has helped you by someone...
Well, it's just helped me understand. It's given me a frame for the chaos of my mind. So when your mind is just chaos and there's nothing holding it in... I think that's where you can often get very negative thoughts and sometimes go down some quite bleak routes. But once you've got this kind of case around your head, and it says, so it doesn't matter what the definition is, that isn't the important part. The important part is now having an understanding of, like, every single gig that I used to do, before I'd go on, I'd go, oh, today's going to be the really clever show that I'm going to do, and it's going to start off with a story probably about the artist Paul Arego, and then I'll tell you, and eventually that funny one about Haidu, and everyone will go, what a clever man. And then, of course, I actually walk out and I go, oh, that's an amazing thing, actually, because I just looked at that exit sign there, and that reminded me, do you remember the public safety film that, and blah, 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 and then I walk off and I go, oh, I forgot to do any of the things. And then I get people coming up to me and they'll say, I've had this on numerous occasions, my husband and I made notes, here are 17 stories you began and did not finish. Yeah. We would like you to finish at least 5 of them for some sense of closure. So, and till I spoke to Jamie, for him, I suddenly went, no one's been returning to my shows going, we're going to keep coming back until he manages a linear narrative, and then we don't have to come back. They've actually been coming back because, as much as I don't know what's going to happen in a show, they don't either. And suddenly realising that has really empowered me enormously. And suddenly realising there are certain people that I'm more comfortable with, and suddenly realising also that you don't have to keep normalising yourself. And I think it's an enormous burden for a lot of people that they go, you know, I'm lucky because I'm in the performing arts and all that stuff. But for a lot of people in the different work environments they're in, they're really boxing themselves in. And there's this incredible flourishing mind that is not a mind that I think, you know, English social rules are really pretty unbearable. I think eventually we'll find out that the problem isn't ADHD. The problem is unbearable social rules. And that the world is, you know, all the art that we've been watching this weekend, all that slapstick, that doesn't come out of just linear thinking. That comes out of something wonderful and strange.
It's kernels of creativity.
Yeah. And I think that's so important. I've got 2 more to go, haven't I? Doctor Who and a hat.
Lovely. So, okay. That was beautifully concise.
I mean, Doctor Who I absolutely love, and I love the fact that it really reached out to, you know, again, everyone loved Doctor Who, but there was a certain love of Doctor Who that meant that you then were hanging around with the, you know, the kids who you could talk through that. So I would say that is a very, very important part of it.
And the hat?
And the hat was entirely made up. I just saw a hat. Very much like The Usual Suspects that moment there. I've just been using the clues there on the table. But I would also say there's a lot of other comics and people that I've worked with. I mean, in fact, this is going to sound kind of trite, but a huge change in me before the other stuff was when my son was born. Mm-hmm. Which I was terrified of.
How old is your son now?
He's now 15. Uh-huh. And I remember, I don't know if anyone else had this, that like, I used to go to sleep when my wife was pregnant thinking, it's probably better that I die in my sleep because I don't know how to bring up a child. I'm probably better as a memory. So he goes, you never knew your father. He died in his sleep. He was a wonderful man. As opposed to, there's your father moving things he shouldn't and knocking stuff over. And I remember being, and then of course the moment it happens, And I love the adventures that we've had together, and I, you know, and I do think that really did expand the way that I looked at the world and the way that I thought about using time, you know, and the fact that, you know, like I do a lot of work, but I don't really have a social life because this is my social life, and then if I'm not working, I'll be at home. And
is your son very relatively like you, and you both then exist? Because one of the ways you explained your process and how your mind works is the fact you just pour loads of stuff in, and there's this most phenomenally brilliant quote about how it creates echoes within your mind, and when you're not speaking and you can hear the echoes, it comes out as interesting narrative to others. It was something you said about yourself, which was an amazing making sense of the way that your brain idiosyncratically works in order to have this constant production of information.
Yeah, he may well have a similar thing. He's since about the age of 2, his teachers always went, he does talk a lot. But yeah, and what I really, I mean, one of the things that I particularly love about him is also his compassion. You know, when you see kids who are always getting ready to defend some of the other kids and stuff like that, is something I think so important. As my friend Joel Morris, we were talking the other day, and just saying, you know, that whole, there are so many beautiful things
that are made to be trite. While so many barbaric things are made to make, oh, what a brilliant person that person is because they write horrible things. And actually, you know, all of those things like love and kindness, which are turned into trite, are just amazing. The endorphin kick or whatever it is that you get. You know those moments where someone's done something kind for you or you've just helped someone or you've had... Like, when I got to Sheffield to go do a gig at the Public Library the other week, I was wearing a badge which has a piece of artwork by someone wonderful called Cressida Campbell, whose sister is Nell Campbell from Rocky Horror Picture Show, amongst other things. And I'd helped someone get their case because the case had got caught up. She was a young woman and she went, oh, I like your badge. And we just had a little chat. And I said, oh, it's Cressida Campbell. And I said, oh, where are you off? She said, oh, I've just left university. I've got a job in Grimsby. I said, I'll tell you somewhere in Grimsby that's a really nice place to go. And we had this five-minute conversation about art and beauty and the fact that sometimes you go places where everyone will say it's rubbish. Mm-hmm. And that's just because they haven't looked at it properly. And then we will never see each other again. But I know that we both kind of left the train, like going, oh, it's nice, isn't
it? So random acts of kindness and reciprocity, just the idea of being present and just giving,
yeah,
however minute a gift might be, but just the idea of being able to be present to that opportunity.
Yeah, and I think because we're scared so much of the time. Like, you know, I think not that long ago, I would not have gone up to the person who I presumed was a stranger looking at the library books. But I now think, what have I got to lose? If she just goes, you're a weirdo and a freak, well, she's correct. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, and the fact that then she went, you know, more often than not, those moments, and you have to work them out. Obviously, I also know that as a middle-aged man, you know, if, for instance, if someone's opposite me reading a book on a train and it's a book I love, I probably won't say anything because I also understand there's tremendous, you know, pressures and fears that people have. But in this situation, it felt like this was a safe area to do something like that.
And even the universe you've created for yourself within your Cosmic Shambles network, you've just got this just proclivity of wanting to connect.
Well, I just meet
really nice
so many brilliant... This is a thing that I really... as someone who is not, I don't think, socially adept in one way, I really do love meeting people who feel that they can drop their guard and just talk to you. And it's one of the most exciting... You know, some of the people who I've become friends with, a lot of them are people in the audience. It's like Natalie K. Thatcher, who did the illustrations for my book. And I met her in the audience about 18 years ago, and we just stayed in contact, and I knew she was brilliant. And then one day I could ring her up and say, hey, Natalie, do you want to illustrate my book? Yeah, I'd love to. And it's like all of those little moments that just started... I went to Weta. Does anyone know Weta, the special effects place in New Zealand, where they do kind of Lord of the Rings and Wakanda Forever and all this stuff? And first of all, it was a wonderful place to go. We were in Wellington, New Zealand. Sometimes I did find it difficult because Brian is very different to me, and the producer, I think, is very different to me. And so my haywire mind was I would get quite, that's weird, that's weird, that's weird. And then suddenly... I'm in this place where they make hobbits' feet and animatronic heads and devil's antlers and swords. And everyone I looked at, I thought, I can talk to anyone here immediately. We've got just this conversation that's going to happen because everyone's like, oh, you're a weirdo freak, I'm a weirdo freak. Oh, this is great, do you know about this? And they all have great T-shirts on, and there was a man there making a sword, and we had a long chat about that. And it was just that, to be in that kind of environment, and know that everyone can talk to each other. It's like when you're at a festival, I hope it happens here. You know, in certain festivals, certain music festivals, you know that you could turn to any stranger and just say, oh, that was a really great event, wasn't it? I really enjoyed that. Are you a fan of? Because you feel safe, and you feel safe to share your love.
I'm also really struck with, you've got a very good memory for these encounters. You're not just broadcasting and not receiving. It sounds like in remembering people from 18 years ago, you're actually getting something from it, but also retaining it. It's not just...
Yeah.
Yes.
Now, I'm always surprised by how much that goes on, that suddenly a whole story comes out. Someone comes up to me and says, do you remember me? You signed a book for me 17 years ago in Cheltenham. And I think, bloody hell, that's a long shot. And then they'll say something, do you remember my sister lives in Dudley? And I go, ah! And then the story comes back, you know. But what I loved, it was so... Like, there was one bit, there was this huge room in Weta with loads of face masks of famous actors. So the life masks that have been used to make makeup. And obviously makeup artists, I think, do swaps because they weren't just people who'd done it. So there were three Vincent Prices of three generations. There was David Bowie's face from Man Who Fell to Earth for the makeup, the prosthetics he wore on that. There was Meryl Streep. There was the wrestler Tor Johnson from Plan 9 from Outer Space. Christopher Lee, all of these things. And I looked at the Peter Cushing one in particular because Peter Cushing's face, of course, is, you know, immediately is Peter Cushing when you see it on the wall. Such fine details. And I just looked at it, and the next day, Richard, who runs Weta, he came to the gig that I was doing with Brian, and he said, I've got something for you, and he gave me a cardboard box, and he'd had 3D printed Peter Cushing's face. And he said, because I noticed how you communicated with it, and I thought this would be something you'd want. And I thought, yeah. And then we have this conversation afterwards where we were talking about making friends with the audience. And he said, yeah, sometimes people say to us, God, you and your wife invite fans round. Aren't you worried they're going to be mad? And he said, well, no, we have a lot in common. He said, we've just had two German women staying, and we'd been communicating about Lord of the Rings, and then they came to, and we said, come and stay with us. Because the thing is, my wife and I are huge fans of Lord of the Rings, and so are those two German women. The difference is, we actually did work on Lord of the Rings, but the main thing is, we have a huge amount in common. Because we love Tolkien, and and I love all of those different things.
And does the Peter Cushing mask have a special pride of place now?
I did have a mirror in my room, which I've not used since I was 31, and I've now just put his face over the mirror. So when I go to turn the mirror, instead, I'm Peter Cushing.
Of course you are.
Rather wonderful. I'm in Whitstable. I'm taken straight to Whitstable.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
A cream tea.
Lest we forget, it is your birthday tomorrow. You are 54, please. So tomorrow, happy birthday to tomorrow.
I made it! They said I never would!
By the way, anyone else has seen any of the slapstick events, there's that brilliant montage at the beginning of all the events. I'm happy to report we're both still here, which is the important thing. So now I think we could be on to three things that inspire you now. And I forgot to mention, by the way, these are your storytelling apples that we're crunching on.
Oh, okay.
On. Don't eat it, it's a prop.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
That's good.
Did you see my fear, by the way? One thing that's never changed is anything involving physical dexterity, like...
You did good, and thank you for catching it. That's good.
If you could have seen the panic, if that had been animated, Aardman would have run out of plasticine. So, inspirations.
Yes.
Right, I'll start off with... I would say Kurt Vonnegut is an inspiration. Because I think that the mixture that he had between going to war, understanding what he had experienced and analysing it and the humanity, and I can repeat over and over again in my head that, God damn it, you've got to be kind. You know, that line from, I think it's God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater. I went to the Kurt Vonnegut Museum and Library when I was in Indianapolis last year. It was the most wonderful space because it was not merely... I'm already annoyed, by the way, because I realised that I've started with Kurt Vonnegut and there's at least 17 other people that I want to do. So just count this as tonight's choice and already... Well, not even tonight's choice. Count it as the choice till 8:20. The new choice at 9:00, ask me at the bar. But I love the passion he had... The vigour he had, the generosity, he had, the way that he would express love to people. I did a thing with Bob Weedy, who has done some great, best known perhaps for Curb Your Enthusiasm, but has made a great documentary about Kurt Vonnegut based on their friendship. And the letter that Kurt Vonnegut sent to him when he and his wife got married, and how much he loved seeing people in love. There's just a real beauty to it. And then the museum and library is wonderful because it is a space for people to work as well. So it's not just saying, do you remember the old man? Here are his old things. It's also about, this is a space for people who don't have a space at home to write. This is a space to meet other people. And, you know, I love that thing. The other one I'll go for is Barry Crimmins. Now, do any of you know Barry Crimmins? Have any of you heard of Barry Crimmins? This is one of my drives, is to tell you about Barry Crimmins, because Barry Crimmins was a really great human being. And I'm going to warn you, there is kind of a trigger warning in what I'm going to tell you, because he had something very terrible happen to him when he was a child. And I saw a movie called Call Me Lucky about Barry. And I think even before that, we'd started communicating back and forth. And you know, sometimes you don't even meet someone face-to-face. Just with emails, you go, man, this connection is just there. Mm-hmm. Even though very different life and stuff. And Barry spent his whole life fighting for the bullied. He was a great comedian. He fought very hard for comedians' rights and stuff on the Boston club scene. Last time I was in Boston, I saw Stephen Wright, the wonderful, you know, surrealist one-liner, all that stuff. And Stephen absolutely adored Barry. In fact, Bobcat Goldthwait is the guy who made the movie about Barry. Barry, one time, I interviewed Barry for a book, and we were talking about what are your, where do you decide not to go? Because, you know, we always hear that, oh, everyone's self-censoring and blah, blah, blah. And again, I think most of this is rubbish. I think you don't need to self-censor. But you do need, if you have free speech, you need to think about how you're using your free speech. Because what a waste of free speech if you just go, bleh. You know, the point is going, I can say anything, so I'm going to think about what I'm going to say. And I asked Barry, I said, what don't you, and this was before he was diagnosed with cancer. I said, Barry, what don't you joke about? And he said, I've never done jokes about cancer. He said, because I've never thought of a joke so funny that I wouldn't be worried afterwards that I'd reminded someone of someone they'd lost and made them sad, or I'd reminded someone of their own battles that they were having at the moment, or a battle for one of their friends or family. He said, and I never felt that I had. And that's what I think. Like, sometimes as ideas are splurging out of my head, there will be a sudden break that comes which goes, hang on a minute, you need to analyse that one. Mm-hmm. Because I don't want anyone coming to a gig and feeling hurt, you know. They might sometimes, if I can argue and happily without cognitive dissonance spinning in my head. And then Barry told me this story, which I thought was, and again, I'm kind of going to warn you about the language that I'm going to use here. Barry was doing a gig, I think it was in the Midwest. He was the headline comic, and he just went on, and there was a couple in the front row who just loved him. Every minute, the laughter got bigger and bigger. You know when sometimes you're in a crowd and there's a couple of people and they're laughing more than everyone else, but it's then carrying you along because their joy is such a beautiful thing to experience, right? They just absolutely love Barry. And afterwards, Barry's at the bar and they come up and they say, Mr. Cremins, can I just say, oh, we had such a great night. It was so great. And he got talking to them. And they said, yeah, you know what? It wasn't always easy tonight because it was quite tough sometimes for us because we don't come out very much. And he said, oh, okay. She said, in fact, we only come out about once a year because we have a child who has various disabilities and those disabilities are very complex and we only have one person we can get. And the first acts came on and each one of them kept saying, retard this and retard that. And we just couldn't really feel comfortable. And then you came out and within 2 or 3 minutes, we got the measure of you and we knew what kind of person you were and we could suddenly feel comfortable. And he said to me, he said, Robin, you see, you always have to remember words are shrapnel. And you have to think about how you aim. And some people will report that as, can you believe it? Now we're not allowed to say that word. And you go, well, you are and you can, but why do you want to? You know, there's this story, I don't care, the Roald Dahl book, I think fat's been removed from a couple of them, whatever, and everyone's up in arms. And I kind of, you know what, it's a pity when we have to sometimes change art and things move on or whatever. But in another way, there's really huge issues that we're dealing with now. And if you're focusing on, well, look, it turns out you're not allowed to say that word anymore. Mm-hmm. It's a bit like, you know, those things when people say things like, when the Daily Telegraph had, which is not always great, when the Daily Telegraph, even my dad stopped reading it and turned to The Guardian, which was quite an existential shock for him. And first week it had an article about Hannah Gadsby and it would just change, you know, he's 92 and he's still very open-minded and still interested in finding out things. And it was about the fact they said, it was a guy in the book trade who said, I worry that due to diversity, we may well not find the next John Grisham. Now, that's the wrong way round, because the worry there to me is, have we missed the next John Grisham? Because the next John Grisham wasn't a white guy. It was someone who was black. It was someone who was trans. It was a woman. It was whatever it might be. And I think, you know, that but it's always turned the other way round. What is actually hopefully a gain is turned into a loss. And that's obviously because of the dominant forces you have in...
The other evening I was very struck with the idea that whatever you're doing in terms of what you're transmitting, it's to do it through a lens of love and kindness with good intentions. So the intention is always very, you know, integrity-fueled. And now, I'm not going to throw something to you, I'm going to pass it to you.
I haven't done the third person yet.
Easy.
Paula Rego.
Catch your number four, please.
I'll just say Paula Rego, because I think Paula Rego is an artist who I absolutely love, and I love the fact that it was only really in late middle age that she became famous and that she became revered, and she reminds us of the importance of tenacity in art, and she also had an incredible mind and was beautifully inventive. She is one of many, I could also say Dorothea Tanning, and there are many other artists like that who I just find beautiful and fascinating and brilliant.
Thank you, Robin. And now this is a question that could be designed for you. This is where a couple of random squirrels come at you. So irrespective of anything else that's going on for you, in the way that your brain works. What are your, oh, squirrels, borrow from the film Up, what never fails to grab your attention? Well, squirrels, irrespective of anything else going on for you.
Well, I would say one of them would probably, well, what it used to be is a negative thing, actually. The squirrel would be the critical voice. That would freeze things. So generally things are moving quite fast, but a critical voice can jam stuff very quickly. So a mixture of a critical voice and a sense of melancholy are these kind of the squirrels of doom, which is actually something we all, I don't know where that came from. I was once walking through a wood with my son and my wife and we saw a squirrel and suddenly we went, they are the squirrels of doom. And you know when you just have, it's something that always stays with you. So every now and again, suddenly when we walk through the woods and go, I hear rustling, the squirrels of doom.
Squirrels
so that would
doom.
Be a squirrel of doom. I'll tell you another one which always distracts. If I suddenly see someone reading a book, I have to know what they're reading. And I know I can't ask sometimes, and I see the spine, and I want to know what's going on in their mind. So that will freeze me in my tracks, because I want to know what movie's playing in their head.
And you've definitely got the right title in Bibliomaniac, because it's almost this maniacal joy of all things literature, basically.
It's the quickest way to get into other people's minds. And it is, you know, and I just adore... It's like, I'm not a good reader. I'm not one who sits down and goes, oh, I've finished the book. I'm all over the shop when I read. But one of the things that I'm going to keep probably banging on about is the fact that now that I've started to deal with some of the anxiety that I've previously had and some of the other things, I find that I've got even more energy. This is why I would say to anyone who is worried about kind of the state of their mind and what they should do next and whether they should actually be open about it, one of the things I will say personally is it has given me even more time. Because the negative voice is not there. And I never realised how tiring it was until you have a whole day where it's not there. Mm-hmm. And I remember being in London not that long ago. I went to a wonderful exhibition at Somerset House called The Horror Show. And I was walking with my wife and my son. And I suddenly went, a bit like, you know, when you don't notice the supermarket music till the supermarket music's not there, was something people used to say, you know. And it was like, I suddenly went, oh, I've done the whole journey here. And we've got here and we sat having a coffee. And I've not been worried about someone else's look towards me. I've not been worrying about what other people are thinking. I've not been worried about whether my shoes were squeaking the wrong way as I went through the quiet bit of the gallery or whatever it was.
So you tamed the beast.
And I really felt this. It felt like a rush of energy to go, oh, yeah, there is a coat that I no longer wear very much.
So it is the great release of the right diagnosis which helps you make sense of it.
Yeah. And it seems... And as everyone, I get so many messages from people who go, we've been telling you for 20 years! I've come to your shows for 20 years! Why didn't you ever listen? But it required, you know, this guy Jamie, this autistic stranger, to get in contact, and somehow that conversation... And again, that's what I love is, by being open to him and not shutting it down, you know, and he's now someone that I like meeting up with, and he tells me a lot of different things about his world and what he needs. And it's just added more pictures. It's added, again, we talked about this offstage before, it adds the layers. It's that palimpsest thing of going, in every room, there's layer upon layer upon layer, story upon story upon story.
So there is a bit of a time agenda that's about to happen. So
oh, yeah.
Get a bit of a lift.
3 minutes,
there.
Let's do it.
So, a quirky or unusual fact about you, bish, bash, bosh, that we couldn't possibly know until you tell
us. Right, I don't know if I... Because when you said that, because I'm very honest, so I think nearly everything gets released.
Really?
Generally, yeah. But, right, this is... It wasn't my first murder. Oh, no, hang on a minute. I'm not going to tell you that one. No. This is a really horrible one I'm going to tell you. I very rarely use nail scissors. I rip my fingernails. I know. I'm sorry.
Horror.
And I don't know why. I just have... It's not like a deliberate thing. I sit there and I do that. And then I go, oh. So that's... I'm really sorry it's an unpleasant... There are much worse ones than that. If I said I have a long stick in which I pick gunk out of my big toe, like Danny DeVito in Always Sunny in Philadelphia, which is a masterpiece.
And now, that's Shaking Your Tree, Alchemy and Gold now. When you're happiest, at purpose and in flow... It's implicit in what you've been saying in any case, because it's about connection. But what are you absolutely happiest doing?
Do you know what? There is not a single answer to that, because it is being in that flow state. It is that moment where, you know, where sometimes when I'm sat doing events over this weekend and I'm sat opposite someone whose work I hugely admire, there is this, you know, sometimes if I'm sat with someone like Alan Moore, who was one of the minds that shaped me in the work that he did on 2000 AD and on like that, and we're sat and having a pizza and we're talking about some kind of very idiosyncratic thing about H.P. Lovecraft or whatever it might be. But actually, I mean, this is a weird transcendent moment that I have quite a lot, which is looking at a wall. And I don't know when it started, but because I try and see, I'm very desperate to find interesting things everywhere, and not go to a place and just go, that was a bit boring. And I was standing opposite in Darlington on Platform 1. You'll often find yourself standing there for longer than imagined due to the collapse of our infrastructure. And there is this huge Victorian wall, huge. And I look at it, and sometimes I just get lost in it thinking of all the hands that went into making the wall and thinking about that structure and thinking about the mines. So it will be something like that. It will be that moment where my son and I are looking at each other and we're both eating a Knickerbocker Glory and looking at the state of our face. And those are the moments. So there's not a singular... I couldn't give you a singular answer.
But it's about because, desire to be truly present and connected.
Yes, and it is something which, in a year's time, this interview would probably be very, very different, because I think it's still a thing that it's a huge change in me in the last 2.5 years. But to the outside, I don't think people would even realise necessarily that it's not like the style of what I do has changed enormously. It's just that there's even more words than there used to be.
Yep.
But it was never, you know, there were never many pauses.
That was one. Hurrah. And now, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, just to get a lick on. How would you most like to be remembered when all is said and done?
Do you know what? I genuinely, when I say I don't care about the name, but what I would like to be, if people want, because that's the interesting thing, is that this is where we still live, this is where the ghosts are the memories that people have of you. And it would just be those things where people go, oh, do you know what? I saw that thing and I had a chat with him afterwards and it was really helpful and I felt happier afterwards. You know, I had a thing, I was in Wolverhampton the other day and this 24-year-old came over to get her book signed. She was with her mum. And then she just burst into tears, and she'd been diagnosed with ADHD and autism, and she just wanted to say that the things that she had found that had been useful, stuff that I'd done and my friend Josie Long had done and things, and it makes you feel the happiness that she could express that. And I kept saying, crying's absolutely, don't feel any embarrassment, and it's like that bit of going, that was useful. I mean, sometimes people say comedy doesn't change anything, for instance, and that's bullshit, right? Comedy might not ultimately bring down the general or whatever, but there are so many, you know, I could talk about Josie, I could talk about Hannah Gadsby, I could talk about Bridget Christie, I could talk about so many different comics that I know people have gone to see their work and there has been a connection that has been made. And there has been this thing which is because we're allowed to allow the weirder thoughts out of our heads, sometimes people hear those weirder thoughts and go, oh, I'm not the only one. And I think that is where comedy does change things, and where not just comedy, art as a whole. I really have such a short, like, now, the number of people, every time I see comics punching down and making people who are already living their lives frequently as victims already, and then they're being victimised as well by someone who's making $30 million and they're on Netflix and all of those things, and I think, wow, that was what you wanted to do with your comedy? You wanted people to feel better about themselves by making sure they knew there were people that they could hate. And they say it's just jokes, and it very rarely is, you know. And so that's why my favourite comics, and some of them are quite dark, like Barry could be very, very dark, and he was certainly not, you know, if anyone wanted to say snowflake or woke or those other tedious clichés, he was a guy who lost a lot of work because the people he aimed his barbs at were people with power, and people with power then don't put you on the telly. And he was and I once asked him, I said, Barry, do you ever feel sad? You know, do you ever? He said, you know what, Robin? Kurt Vonnegut had a favourite joke of mine, and I consider that better than being on Saturday Night Live.
Oh, random squirrels, that means another random squirrel is coming. We are running out of time.
Right.
And finally, passing the golden baton, who in your network would you most like to pass the golden baton on to have a good listening to now you've experienced it from within, please?
Right, I'll tell you what, my friend Grace Petrie. I think she would be very interested. She's a brilliant folk singer. She's a brilliant activist. She's a human being with a lot of stories to tell. So I think Grace Petrie.
Grace Petrie. There is so much more that we could be talking about, but we are running out of time because
we have
needing to get into the Michael
What's
Palin.
What's great is we've set up an alibi. So I can pretend to myself they're all going because it's Michael Palin. But they may not have tickets to Michael Palin. They're just going, oh, well, at least it looks like we're leaving for a reason, as opposed to the reason of, oh, my God, it's still going on.
So lest we get killed in a stampede, we are now going to be carried majestically aloft as we crowd surf to the next venue. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much indeed. You've been given cards. Do give some feedback to what you thought about this construct. You have been listening to the polymath becardiganed awesome pants that is Mr. Robin Ince. Thank
and Chris. Let's hear Chris as well.
Thank you very much indeed. And thank you for watching on Facebook and YouTube as well. Thank you.
Thank you. No, that's all right. I hope it wasn't too serious.
No, tickety-boo.
Thanks very much, everyone.
You've been listening to The Good Listening To show here on UK Health Radio with me, Chris Grimes. Oh, it's my son.
If you've enjoyed the show, then please do tune in next week to listen to more stories from The Clearing.
If you'd like to connect with me on LinkedIn, then please do so. There's also a dedicated Facebook group for the show too. You can contact me about the programme, or if you'd be interested in experiencing some personal impact coaching with me, care of my Level Up Your Impact programme, that's chris@secondcurve.uk. On Twitter and Instagram, it's
@ThatChrisGrimes.
So until next time, from me, Chris Grimes, from UK Health Radio, and from Stan,
to your good health.
Goodbye.